I'll begin this morning by confessing that I am not at all sure that placator is an accepted English word. Don't really know, but I used it in my message title anyway. Some things, you know, it's too good to check, you know, so you just go with what you've come up with. For one thing, it goes so nicely with the word pilot. You know, pilot the placator. For another, it should be a word, even if it isn't. You know, so I'm just going to go forward. What else would you call a person who placates? Anyway, the point is that we see Pilate doing a lot of placating in the passage before us. Rather than standing upon principle, upon conscience, he is desperate to appease all those around him, all those who might cause problems for him, might be able to upset his personal agenda. He's prepared to make peace with anyone except the one person who will be his final judge. And that is an eternal error. In this, we once again see the foolishness and the ignorance of the natural man. We talked about it in Sunday school, the self-destructive path that you will continue upon. We saw last week that Pilate has become convinced that Jesus is no political threat to Rome. Jesus has proclaimed that he rules a kingdom based on truth. It involves hearts and minds. Pilate has dodged the personal implications of such a statement, but he is content to let Jesus go. This is an innocent man. He knows that. Being a thoroughgoing pragmatist, Pilate saw Jesus as a hopeless idealist, but he seemed harmless enough. So he is going to make a lukewarm attempt to release him. And because of this, we might be tempted to think that Pilate, he was really an okay guy. He was just overwhelmed by circumstances beyond his control. I believe what is actually illustrated here is the truth of Jesus' words. If you are not for me, you are against me. If you're not for me, you are against me. Being willing to leave Jesus alone, that doesn't cut it. And when it comes right down to it, when the rubber meets the road, Pilate acts as every unbeliever will act. If he needs to sacrifice an innocent man, sacrifice truth and justice, in order to make a personally advantageous peace, he will do it. Self-preservation is the name of the game. Pilate will placate whomever he needs to in order to retain and enhance his earthly power. John 18:38 tells us that after Pilate's first interview with Jesus, he went back to the Jewish leaders and said that he could find no guilt in him. A constant refrain. To learn what happened next, we are turning to Luke's account. John skips over Pilate's first act of appeasement, doubtless because he knew it was already recorded for us. But our first point involves Pilate placating Herod. Luke chapter 23, verses 4 through 12. Luke 23, 4. Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, I find no guilt in this man. But they kept on insisting, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place. When Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day. For before, they had been enemies with each other. We see that Pilate's assertion that Jesus has done nothing worthy of death leads to a flurry of accusations. So Pilate is once again on the defensive, wondering how he is going to pick his way through this political minefield. Remember that his relationship with the Jews, well, was already shaky. A few more complaints from their leaders and the job he was doing, well, he could be sent packing back to Rome in disgrace. But in the midst of these charges, thinking, what am I going to do? A word pops out that appears to give hope to Pilate. And that word is Galilee. Did you say Galilee? Oh, maybe opportunity is knocking here. Although Jesus had been born in the province of Judea, he had grown up in the north in Nazareth. He could therefore be considered a Galilean, and it was Herod who ruled that province on behalf of Rome. A couple of clever thoughts now enter Pilate's mind. First and foremost, he wants to unload this baffling case on someone else. Maybe Herod, a man with closer ties to the Jews, would know what to do about this strange spiritual teacher. If Herod found something that merited death here, well, he could pronounce sentence on this man, and Pilate could, again, pretend that his conscience is clear. Hey, Herod did it. But beyond this, a gesture of respect such as this might also serve to mend some fences. Remember that Pilate had created some tension with Herod by butting into his jurisdiction and killing some Galileans earlier in his governorship. This might be just the move to smooth things over. We see in this that Pilate is just as evil as the Jewish leaders. Again, there's no option of, well, look, he keeps saying he's innocent, he's trying, he's not bad. He knew that Jesus was innocent. But he was still willing to use Jesus as a helpful card in the great game of worldly power. He didn't know what would happen to Jesus in Herod's hands. And you know what? He did not particularly care what would happen to him. All he saw was an opportunity, okay, ready for the proverbial, kill two birds with one stone. Pilate was right on the mark in regard to Herod's desire to see Jesus. Yeah, Pilate had scored a good one there. Herod had been hoping to see Jesus for years because of all the talk in Galilee about his miracles. But as had been the case with John the Baptist, Herod's interest was purely one of morbid curiosity. Anything strange, anything supernatural, anything, you know, just kind of weird, put a little chill up the spine. He had zero interest in sincerely investigating Jesus' claim to spiritual authority over all men. In that way, he was very much like Pilate. That was the furthest thing from his mind, to find out, you know, what is this guy really saying about my spiritual needs? This second stage of Jesus' state, or we could call it his Gentile trials, it's yet another sickening scene, as we saw in that reading of Luke. The Sanhedrin is keeping up the barrage of false accusations. They just follow, you know, Jesus around wherever he goes to make sure that they're, you know, getting in all their shots. Herod is prodding Jesus to do something, say something that, you know, will give him that, you know, that cheap thrill. What's he going to do? What's he going to do? Is he going to do some kind of a miracle? The master, of course, refuses to perform like he's some sort of a trained monkey. Maybe you've been in that position before. You know, hey, do that. Do that again. I heard you can do this. Let's see it. Nobody really enjoys that particular position. And Jesus was not going to, you know, give in to that kind of treatment. Cater to that. Everyone's getting more and more frustrated here in this situation once again, except for that calm figure of Jesus in the eye of the hurricane. As far as the charges go, well, they don't make any more sense to Herod than they did to Pilate. He's not seeing anything in that. Is no reason to condemn Jesus, but like Pilate, neither will he acquit him. Say, you've got to cease and desist. Leave this guy alone. In the end, he's just as gutless as Pilate. He mocks Jesus. Why did he do that? Well, that was his way of punishing him, right? He mocks Jesus to punish him for not humoring him with some, you know, miraculous signs. Isn't that the way we act when we can't get someone to, you know, join in our sin, to help us with our agenda? Oh, you're acting like you're too good for that? Well, then we'll mock you. Then Herod sends this hot potato back to Governor Pilate. How fitting it is that a mutual disregard for the Son of God did bring these two men together. Now, as we've seen on the Jewish side, opposition to Jesus is the one thing that all evil men can agree upon. I mean, what are you seeing in these trials? You know, Herodians, Sadducees, Pharisees, the common man, so to speak, Pilate, the Roman government, the soldiers, you know, the people around Herod. Did these people have anything in common? You put all those people together. I mean, they hated each other. But they're all on the same team in these accounts. So Pilate accomplishes one of his objectives. He and Herod they're good. But he's exasperated with the other one because Jesus lands right back in his lap. He's going to have to come up with some other way out of this bind. Of course, it's all predicated on the fact that he won't just do what's right. He's going to have to find another way to do what's wrong, because it just won't work out. how can he placate this crowd of increasingly passionate Jews and still salvage some measure of self-respect? So still be able to walk away with some thought of, well, I can tell myself I did the right thing. We move now to what we call the third stage of Jesus' state trial, and we see Pilate's first attempt to directly appease the Jews in John 18, 39 and 40. He says, "But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you wish then that I release for you the King of the Jews?" So they cried out again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. Here Pilate hits upon what he thinks is a surefire way of freeing Jesus while satisfying the Sanhedrin that Jesus had been regarded, at least in some way, as a criminal. He will placate everyone through an act of generosity. Boy, this could really work out. He would look magnanimous while still accomplishing all of his fleshly goals. Each year it was customary for the Roman governor to free a Jewish prisoner as a gesture of goodwill. Jesus is not technically a prisoner. He's not been convicted of anything. But Pilate was happy to consider him as one in order to get out of this mess. Pilate, knowing how popular Jesus has been with the people this week, offers to release him. Okay, do you see how he's thinking? Wow, Palm Sunday was amazing. And everybody was praising him and, you know, these hosannas, and I don't know what that is all about, but this guy seemed to really have the common man behind him. I think that I could get them behind this and this could work. Surely they would respond to his proposition with wild acclaim. This would force the Sanhedrin's hand. Okay, still playing the political power game. So clever. You know, they couldn't fault Pilate for listening to the declared will of their own countrymen, could they? But Pilate miscalculated. As one of our political leaders would say, he misunderestimated the priests. They were one step ahead of him. Do you see how that worked? You could just see the Sanhedrin. Oh, gonna try and weasel out of it that way, are you? Well, they would turn his own play against him. They were one step ahead. Public opinion would be rallied to their purposes, not to Pilate's. Mark 15:11 tells us that the chief priests stirred up the multitude to ask him to release Barabbas for them, not this Jesus. How did they persuade the crowd to do this? Well, we don't know for sure. We're not told exactly. Perhaps they played on the Jewish distaste for Pilate himself. Don't accept any offer from this dog. Don't you remember all the things that he's been doing to us? Yeah, you're right. Perhaps they intimidated and threatened the people. They were very good at that. You want to be allowed in the synagogue or whatever? You know, you better fall into line here. In any case, Pilate is foiled again. a man who was not only a robber, as we read in John, but ironically, as we learn elsewhere, a notorious revolutionary, is set free rather than the Son of God. The hypocrisy of these Jewish leaders, it just has no limit. They agitate to seek to free someone who was truly guilty of the very crime that they were falsely accusing Jesus of committing. They had lied, knowingly lied, saying that he was somebody trying to create an insurrection. And Pilate has already found out, knows that that's not true. And yet, they're saying, give us somebody who truly had been doing that. Well, don't we see in this an illustration of Jesus, you know, bearing the sins that we could rightly be accused of? And certainly Satan does try to accuse us of. All believers are, in a sense, Barabbas, right? The person who was supposed to go to the cross, and yet Christ came in instead. The just for the unjust. We go free. Well, a magnanimous gesture didn't work for Pilate. Boy, he's trying. He's coming up with, man, good attempts. Gee, I wonder why it's not working. Well, perhaps there was still room for a compromise here. The one that would be rather hard on Jesus, verses 1 through 5, Pilate then took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and put a purple robe on him. And they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews!" and to give him slaps in the face. We learn elsewhere that they were saying things like, "Hey, tell us who just slapped you." Ha ha ha. Pilate came out again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing out him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." How many times is he going to say this? Jesus then came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man!" Here Pilate seeks to placate the crowd through abusing Jesus. And we can see how his mind was working here. He probably justified his treatment of Jesus with the thought that, well, I'm trying to save his life. But this is the twisted product of a depraved mind. From God's view, Pilate was punishing an innocent man to save his own skin. That's what was really going on here. He could tell himself whatever he wanted to. Scourging was a hideous torture. The scourge consisted of a short wooden handle to which several thongs were attached. I'm sure you've seen this. To the ends of the thongs were secured bits of metal and pointed bone. And this implement was used to score the back, whip the back of the one who was being scourged. The body was lacerated to the point that veins and arteries and even organs were exposed. Scourging often resulted in death. Often they didn't make it any further than the scourging process, because that was enough to kill a man. The mockery that followed this torture, it does not seem to have been ordered by Pilate. Again, you know, he would be too, you know, fastidious probably for that, but that does not lessen his responsibility for it. The soldiers are under his command. He's responsible for what they do. Apparently, you know, Pilate did not wish to observe the scourging. He kind of retreated once again, and the soldiers took advantage of his absence to say, well, why not have a little fun here? They had heard that Jesus styled himself a king, so they made him up as a mock ruler. I don't know if this was the same robe that Herod had put him in. It might very well have been. But even in this, we see the hand of God in what they do. They, you know, from their standpoint, they were just on the spur of the moment coming up with some mockery to, you know, fill the time and entertain themselves. But what was the first penalty for sin that God declared to Adam? The ground would be cursed and would bear thorns and thistles. You think it was happenstance that they made a crown of thorns, jammed that down on his head? Jesus now bears the symbol of man's sin as he prepares to remove the curse of the first Adam. Pilate comes back out to face the Jews, believing that surely this will have satisfied the leader's desire for Jesus to be completely humiliated. This has got to do it now. Look at this guy. Beaten to a bloody pulp. Despite the fact, shall he say it again? This man is innocent. He states that for the umpteenth time. No guilt in this man. And then he says, behold the man. The famous painting, you know, that we saw at the Truth Project each time. Pilate presenting Jesus to the crowd. As if to say, from his standpoint, I think, just look at what I've done to this man, despite his innocence, in order to placate you. Behold, look. But it was not enough. It's never enough. This was not enough to satisfy the bloodlust that was now raging in this multitude. Verses 6 and 7. So when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out saying, crucify, crucify. Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God. Now the whole crowd is taking up the chant of the Sanhedrin. The word rolls in waves over Pilate. Crucify, crucify. The pressure is becoming unbearable. And so Pilate makes a final try at appeasing the crowd in a way that will leave him free of Jesus' death. He says, in essence, if this is so important to you, I don't get it. But if you just have to have your way, you have my permission to take him away, and if you put him to death, that's what happens. Leave me out of it. Pilate is willing to turn a blind eye if he can escape seeming to be personally involved in the killing act. But these are hollow words, and the Jews know it. The Jews have his number by now. They know they have the upper hand. They realize Pilate is trying, you know, one last evasion, hoping to return Jesus to them. As we've mentioned, they can't legally crucify Jesus. They sense that Pilate might even be reminding them of their subject status as a way to kind of wriggle out of this situation. And so they shift gears here once again, right at the last minute here, on the reason why Jesus' death was so warranted. maybe Pilate wasn't finding him guilty in regard to Roman law, but Jewish law demanded his death for blasphemy. So this is again an issue, and again this is presented to Pilate. And John, again, he focuses on this question all through his book of the deity of Jesus, and it comes up once again here. It's for all men to have to deal with. Is this man actually who he claims to be, the Son of God? Do you have any evidence to the contrary? Well, Pilate wasn't enough of an expert on Jewish law to state that Jesus was not guilty of blasphemy. He wasn't going to stand there and tell the Jewish nation that he was going to make a ruling of that kind. He was bound to respect the Jewish religion under the guidelines that were established by Rome. The leaders had not brought out this charge earlier because they did not want Pilate to dismiss this out of hand, so they'd gone the whole revolutionary route. But now they have the screaming crowd behind them. Now they've got Pilate on the run. Now he's in too deep. And they're daring Pilate to deny their interpretation of the scriptures. Well, that's something that he is not going to feel that he can do. Next week we will see how this contest of wills came to its conclusion. And we will witness then the bottom line of Pilate's character. Let's glean a couple of principles from this passage before we finish up. First, don't we see that when it comes to Jesus, the unbelieving world cannot be placated? Pilate's experience is a perfect example of what Jesus told his disciples to be prepared for back in chapters 15 and 16. Now, Pilate was far from a believer. But we see what happens when someone gets in between the world and the destruction of Jesus, don't we? When you get in between an unbeliever or a group of unbelievers and how they want to treat Jesus, this is what's going to happen. The pressure to capitulate will be relentless. You cannot back off far enough to appease the crowd. And if you're not clearly for him, they will push you to be against him. We can give in and give in and give in. Trying to keep peace with the world and yet still hold on to Jesus. Still say, hey, I'm not finding any guilt in him. I'm not against him. It's not going to work. We can be like a Lot. Where you accommodate the world to the point where you're willing to give your own daughters out the front door to satisfy the lust of the crowd. But when it comes to tearing down Jesus and his message, the world is insatiable. Insatiable. If we show weakness, it will exploit that until our testimony and our relationship with Christ is completely compromised, all but destroyed. So we ought to make up our minds to stand firm for the truth, from the outset, and see the world as the determined opponent of Christ that it is. And then secondly, we see that when we try to achieve a good result by devious means, it only results in evil. Pilate's desire to spare Jesus' life was right and good. That was a right and good desire. His evaluation of Jesus was correct, as far as it went, obviously. But rather than declare Jesus to be innocent, perhaps to investigate further, you know, who he really is, rather than stand on principle and say, hey, and then I just have to let the chips fall where they may, Pilate just kept playing games. And this led him down and down and down the slippery slope. You know, here's a rule for living. At the point where you are whipping Jesus in order to save him, a light ought to, you know, go on in your mind and say, you know, I've got off course here. I should not be whipping, you know, this innocent, obviously, you know, spiritual man in order to try and save him from the crowd. Pilate is an example of how we can deceive ourselves that these means are going to justify the end. If we're going to lie, steal, ignore responsibilities, you know, whatever it is, with the thought that, well, you know, it's okay to do that because I'm really pursuing some sort of a lofty goal, we're going to find ourselves caught in a very sticky web of sin. You know, we saw it with Peter, and we saw that because Jesus was praying for him, God graciously brought him back out of that downward spiral. With Pilate, no such grace is operating, and he just continues on down till he makes impact and is engulfed in flames. Let's determine for ourselves that we are going to act righteously in all of our ways. Well, I have a little bit more to say, but first, why don't we turn to hymn number 195. Hymn number 195, Nothing But the Blood of Jesus.